Chapter 14. The logistics of their match proved a conundrum. Jamie's pride resisted an audience as much as Brienne's sense of duty resisted leaving Sansa to her own devices in the absence of a heavily chaperoned shopping trip. Neither party being willing to abandon their individual concerns entirely, a heated debate was met after breakfast. The compromise, once reached, owed more to Lady Sansa than it did either Jaime or Brienne. Sansa wished to take the air and practice her watercolors with a few of the young ladies, who had immediately jumped at the chance to be her particular friend for the week. At length, Brienne convinced Jaime that sparring a few yards distant from the ladies, otherwise occupied, would suffice. They arranged themselves in the direction directly opposite of the idyllic pond the girls had chosen for their paintings. And, after further consideration, a bit off to one side, half-shielded by a copse of trees, whereupon Jamie was satisfied that very little would be seen by anyone but them and Peck, who was acting the footman and seeing to their gear in deference to his paranoid master. They'd been made to use what Mr. Bolton had about, as neither of them had packed for the trip thinking to fence upon their arrival. Though, as Brienne had intended to ride and perhaps partake of some shooting, she was in possession of more appropriate clothing than she had ever been privileged to in London. It was with great relish that she dressed in shirt sleeves, a waistcoat, trousers, and a simple neckcloth, all under a smart dark blue coat that flared at the waist. It was far closer to the attire of her father's youth than anything that the bucks were swarming about Heron Hall would consider of the mode, but Brienne did not care for fashion, only function. Sansa had no objection, as she had seen Brienne in such attire numerous times at Winterfell. Her companions gave Brienne the typical range of odd looks. Jaime simply stared at her appraisingly for a moment, but made no comment. When they arranged themselves across from each other, foils in hand, Jamie did not seem to hold it any differently than he ever had, nor was there any alteration to his flippant salute. It was only upon crossed blades that Brienne could tell the difference. Her first parry threw him completely off balance as he struggled to keep hold of his weapon. The tip of her foil was pointed at his chest, pure reflex, before he had looked back up at her. He quirked his eyebrows, challenging. He was either daring her to give up immediately and name him hopeless and accept that he was done, or he was expecting her to do so and wished to be prepared. Instead, Brienne dropped the point of her sword and stepped back, moving into position again. "On guard, my lord," she said. He hesitated, clearly unsure how to approach her casual acceptance of this drastic loss of ability. "Are you giving up so easily, my lord?" Brienne asked. "Or are you merely that afraid of losing?" Jaime snorted. "I'm no craven." "Then, on guard," Brienne repeated. They continued, Brienne feeling him out, adjusting her movements to match and counter his. It soon became clear that his grip strength was nearly what it had been, but the greater concern was the dexterity of his arm. His handsome features twisted in frustration as flourishes that had been like breathing for him before proved themselves either painful or beyond his capabilities. Even so, Brienne could still note markers of his preternatural skill with a blade, his instincts, his footwork, the beauty of his movements in moments when he managed to execute a strike or a parry perfectly. The swordsman he had been was still there. It would only take time, Brienne thought. Even as their session continued, she could note improvement on his part. It was thus quite perplexing when, after very nearly parrying a killing strike from Brienne, Jaime disengaged all of a sudden. "That's enough," he said roughly, brow furrowed as he stared at her, on the edge of fury. "What?" Brienne asked incredulously. "It's hardly been 2 hours. You're improving all—" "I said that's enough," he insisted. And Brienne realized that his angry gaze was not directed towards her, but beyond her. She spun around to find that a few of Sansa's companions had apparently tired of their watercolors. They had crept across the distance and stood now, leaning against a tree and doggedly pretending that they had not just been staring intently. Their color was high, and Brienne knew immediately that it could be owed to Jaime having doffed his coat and cravat. He'd also opened the buttons on his waistcoat, and his linen shirt fairly gaped at the collar, revealing a not insubstantial sliver of skin. "They're just girls," Brienne said, cajoling. "And yet still capable of both sight and speech," he gritted out. "If you worry they'll tell tales, I'm certain they're paying far more attention to the width of your shoulders." "Must you be so stubborn?" Jaime snarled, throwing his foil to the ground. Behind him, Peck seemed caught between the desire to pick it up and reluctance to approach his master during his current fit of pique. "I said that I'm done." The agitation that had carried him through their long debate this morning had receded while they fought, but now she could see it rushing back, stiffening his shoulders and chilling his voice.
"You don't understand. I'll not be stared at, subject to such looks of pity from..."
All at once, Brienne's ire rose to match.
"I don't understand that? You mean the sort of pity with which I am regarded by most women who meet me the instant they look at my face and form? Or perhaps you'd rather enjoy the novelty of the disgust that some level at me because I do not meet their standard for a proper young lady? Or should you prefer to sample the searing resentment from men whom I disabuse of the notion that they can treat me like a light skirt because I'm so mannish and ugly that my virtue is meaningless? Looks and stares do nothing. I've survived them. You will too."
He stepped towards her, one hand slowly raising, his face softening. Aware of their audience, Brienne moved away before he could touch her. He dropped his hand and looked at her studiously for a long moment, during which Brienne's embarrassment at her outburst crept its way up her neck to blare from her cheeks. At last, Jaime spoke, his voice soft but determined. "I would strike down any man who looked at you that way. For that reason. Know that." Brienne swallowed thickly, and she felt the hint of a smile twisting her mouth at his bombastic pledge. "Then you will most definitely need all the practice you can manage," she replied. Jaime sighed heavily, eyes closed. "Stubborn shit," he muttered, but he picked up the foil. The next few days fell into a routine. They broke their fast together, then sparred in the morning, in clearings and on patios, wherever they could find a bit of privacy, but still keep Sansa within sight. After refreshing themselves, they would then submit to their host's entertainments for the rest of the day. These consisted of large amounts of food and drink, loud conversation, owed primarily to Mrs. Bolton's relatives, card games with stakes just low enough to bore the gentlemen present, and endless displays of the company's rather dubious talents for song, instrument, and verse. Seating arrangements separated Brienne from both Sansa and Jaime at dinner, though the latter took to catching her eye from down the table by pulling faces and otherwise making clear his less than complimentary opinion of his dinner companion's conversation. Sansa remained absorbed as ever in every word that fell from the Duke of Kingsland's often pouting lips, but never objected to staying at Brienne's side upon adjourning to the parlor. Jaime, conversely, made very clear that in an ideal world, he would never be expected to reappear after port. Brienne could fault him little for this, given the attention he garnered from the majority of the ladies present. It was much akin to the sort of attention a pack of hunting dogs afforded a fox. Befitting the comparison, Jaime was cunning and proved exceptionally skilled at dodging both introductions to misses and innuendo from matrons and widows. Instead, he amused himself primarily with hovering near Brienne as she played cards and ceaselessly critiquing her strategy. When Brienne chanced to suggest that he make use of his considerable status to simply beg off and go do whatever he pleased elsewhere, Jaime only scoffed and teased that if he did, she would never win another hand of loo. Thus distracted with trying to play her hand as she, and not Jaime, pleased, Brienne was taken entirely by surprise when, with most of the elder guests having already retired, Mrs. Bolton announced that a less sedate amusement was to be desired. "We shall have a round of hide-and-seek," she said, clapping her plump little hands together. The young ladies present, Sansa included, immediately approved with such ardency and volume that Brienne knew any protest she raised would find no supporters. It was inviting danger and impropriety to have young gentlemen and young ladies skulk about the manor, deliberately looking for shadowy corners and abandoned rooms. But with the hostess endorsing and overseeing, Brienne was left with little recourse. Jaime made his own concerns quite clear with a rather eloquent string of profanity under his breath, while Mrs. Bolton, none the wiser, chose one of her Frey relatives, a brother or a cousin, Brienne had little idea, to be the first seeker. "Well, as I will have no more hands of cards requiring your tyrannical oversight, you truly can retire to your room," Brienne said to him, as a nearby debate broke out over how high the unidentified Frey should count before commencing his hunt. Jaime scoffed. "And have one of these misses follow me up and decide to hide in my bedchamber? I think not." Brienne wanted to deny that anyone would attempt to trap him so blatantly. But given that she was well aware that any number of ladies would indeed do just that, the words would not clear her throat. "Then what do you plan?" Brienne asked, although the way he had shuffled closer to her as the company prepared to set off into the manor gave her every indication. "You've recently held your skills as a chaperone in high regard," Jaime said, eyes wide and full of excessively innocent pleading. "Surely you would lend them to a friend in need." Brienne narrowed her own eyes at him, but the call to hide went out before she could respond. She and Jaime were both buffeted by the sea of aristocratic youth rushing to the parlor doors. Sansa's bright hair was easily identifiable even in the crush, and Brienne saw that she was arm in arm with two other young ladies before they disappeared around a corner with a questionably ladylike shriek and fit of giggling. Brienne made to follow, only to find her movement abruptly arrested. She investigated the phenomenon and discovered that Jaime had looped his fingers around the back of her sash and was quite deliberately going in the opposite direction. "My lord!" she exclaimed. "We want to get away from the chattering magpies, if you happen to recall," he said, as though she were the one being unreasonable. Brienne swatted at his hand, forcing him to release her sash, though he only claimed one of the folds of her skirt instead. "Do you happen to recall that you are a grown man, my lord?" He did not look at all chagrined, and Brienne huffed violently before turning to follow the others. Jaime, with a long-suffering sigh and a persistent grip on her skirt, followed. "You are a grown man," Brienne repeated as she strode past the library and a billiard room that were both too commonly used to likely be hiding spots. "And as a consequence of being a grown man, not my actual charge." "Lady Sansa is surrounded by an entire court of young misses. She couldn't get into any trouble if she wanted to do so," he said firmly. "And frankly, your lack of concern for the very present danger that I face is quite callous, Chit." Brienne shushed him. The sounds of shuffling and hushed voices emanated from a hall up ahead. Brienne proceeded towards it, only to be pulled nearly off her feet as Jaime suddenly tugged her into a darkened room. He let the door swing closed behind them with a click, arms still firm around Brienne's waist, before arranging them against a wall next to the entryway. So close was their proximity that, for a moment, he filled her vision, green eyes gleaming as her own adjusted to the near darkness, the slope of his nose, the fall of golden hair against his brow, the scent of him, cheroot and sandalwood, clouded her thoughts. Brienne screwed her eyes shut, then, upon opening them, averted her gaze from his to take in the rest of the room. It was an office. She could see past Jamie's ear, with a tall window letting moonlight fall across a massive oak desk. Perhaps Mr. Bolton's own, where he absconded to dourly conduct dour business with his cold eyes and whispery tones. Dreadfully dull business, she imagined, perhaps poring over columns of numbers with a somber man of business dressed in all grays. Mind reinforced against Jamie's nearness by such considerations, Brienne opened her mouth to scold him, but he pressed two fingers to her lips, silencing her before more than a syllable had escaped. He darted his eyes deliberately towards the door, and, focusing her attention as he indicated, Brienne heard it. Above the blood rushing in her ears and heating her face, Brienne detected footsteps out in the hall. Slow and measured, they paused intermittently, lost between the creak of doors opening, then closing again. The Fray Seeker. Brienne's heart beat rapidly in her ears a dozen times, Jaime's large warm fingers still pressed against her mouth before the door beside them opened just a crack. It remained open only long enough for Brienne to spy the tip of a long nose before it closed again, and the footsteps retreated. At last, Brienne pushed Jaime's hand away. "I don't care about winning the bloody game," she whispered fiercely, more irritated with her own inaction these last minutes than with him. Jaime grinned hugely at her, teeth white in the darkness, and Brienne realized what she'd said. Her blushing intensified, and she expected that soon her face would be bright enough to illuminate the room. "Such language," Jaime said with affected archness. "And you should care about not losing at least. If you're caught, then you'll have to go back and sit in the parlor, and who knows what your little Lady Sansa might get into while you're so unjustly imprisoned." "It's not funny," Brienne said. But the smile threatening to break across her own face belied her stern words. "You're a terrible liar," Jaime said. He backed away at last, but only enough that Brienne felt a sudden chill absent the warmth of his body nearly flush with hers. Oh, he was a danger. Such a danger to her still, and she was a fool for ever thinking otherwise. "If matrimonial designs distress you so much, you could just leave the house party," she heard herself say. The corner of his mouth lifted in a smirk, but his green eyes were flinty, daring. "That eager to be rid of me, eh?" Brienne swallowed once, thickly. "That's not what I said." "Of course it isn't." The smirk bloomed into another grin. "You adore having me around." "I didn't say that either." His left hand was flat against the wall just above her shoulder. She should ask him to move. She should demand that he move. Brienne did not. "Ah, Miss Tarth," he crooned. "Still so cruel. Your praise so rare and so stingy." "I highly doubt you need praise from me," Brienne replied. "There are any number of people who would be glad to massage your sense of self-worth, though it needs little assistance." "Yes, and then they would be just as glad to eviscerate me with gossip the moment my back is turned." This was said without real bitterness. "I've told you before, I prefer you." Her face impossibly got hotter, her ears burning. Jaime noted it, his eyes flickering to her ears and then back to her countenance, and he laughed. Brienne bristled to be so easily manipulated, and at him taking such amusement from provoking reactions. Before she could voice an objection, he let out a low sigh, his breath warm against her neck. "Christ, but I missed you," he said. "Language," Brienne began by rote. "My lord, I know," Jaime finished. He was still staring at her, his eyes fixed on her face. "You know," Brienne managed, "you just prefer to be dreadful at every opportunity." "If I wasn't dreadful, at whom would you make such stern faces?" he asked softly. He shifted, just a bit, on his feet, and it brought him closer yet again. If she took a very deep breath, her chest would brush against his. She didn't know if he'd done it on purpose. "Before our acquaintance, I had little need for stern faces." He shook his head, ruefully, a fond smile curving his mouth. "You still haven't learned that you simply cannot lie with those eyes," Jaime said. Brienne only looked at him, entranced. He was so close again, and there was no hope of distraction. His eyes pinned her, his gaze penetrating and intent. "It's better this way," he said, voice dropped to such a low volume that, even so near, she barely heard him. that you don't know. Elsewise, what a danger you'd be. Brienne blinked, and Jaime traversed the last of the distance between them and pressed his mouth to hers. His lips were soft and warm. He moved them gently, dotting tiny, nibbling kisses across her wide mouth, each one sending a friction through her, a potent, pulsing shock, making her fingers and toes tingle and heat bloom in her belly. Brienne sighed against his mouth, and he took the opportunity to insinuate his upper lip between both of hers. He darted out his tongue as he moved his mouth more firmly now, sipping at her like a glass of ratafia. His hand was a brand at her waist, and he slid it slowly backwards to flex his fingers right above the curve of her bottom. Her skirts rustled as he stepped into her, their bodies flush. He brought his right hand to her face to curve about her cheek. Brienne melted into him and, tentatively, mirrored his movements. She had no point of reference, no skill, only the hot press of him against her as a guide. He groaned, a low rumbling sound, and Brienne felt lightheaded. She half expected to wake in her bed, alone and wanting, for surely it had to be a dream. She'd known for so long it could only ever be a dream. No matter how she wished it, Jaime would never, no one would ever, unless... Before Brienne could even think it, her hand rose up and struck like a viper. The slap was deafening in the quiet room. Jaime released her. Is it another... She began, unable to think, unable to see, for a moment, any other option. But no, a voice said. That was over. And this was Jaime. Cruelty through deception was not his way. It was always his honesty that would undo her. Her voice died out, but he had found his. I apologize, he said in a rush, his eyes wide. He didn't mean anything at all. She could see it on his face. An impulse, a base male urge, nothing more. As surprising to him, perhaps, as it had been to her. You didn't mean to take liberties, Brienne said, hardening her voice, hardening her heart. No, of course not. You just what? She needed him to say it, to stamp out the lingering embers of her hope. He only looked at her, struggling for words. Am I to understand that you have intentions, my lord? She continued implacably. Was it a declaration? No, he blurted, and she did not flinch. I don't know. Brienne moved from the wall, swept past him, gave him her back. Never tell me you were intending to make me amenable to a proposal, she asked. Such an incredible turnaround of opinion from a man who'd sought nothing but to escape even the merest hint of matrimony not an hour ago. Brienne, he shouted, a command or an entreaty she could not tell. I did not give you leave to use my Christian name. Listen to me. He crossed the room to her and took her by her shoulders, forced her to face him again. I did not mean to offend you, he said. You were close, and I wasn't thinking. If you would, unhand me. Brienne, he said again, as she pulled away from his grasp. I must go. The door was only a few feet away, her bedchamber a few yards, a flight of stairs. She could make it that far. Her legs were already moving. Brienne, please, think nothing more of it. I shall not, she said as she fled through the door. Her body carried her through the halls while her traitorous mind thought of nothing else but the press of Jaime against her, transporting her, and the hot rush of humiliation that had brought her back to earth. She did not even remember Sansa until the girl appeared from the opposite direction, making the trek to her own rooms directly across from Brienne's. She did not speak to Brienne, barely acknowledged her, and Brienne knew in an instant something was wrong. Sansa's face was flushed, her eyes watery. Not so different, just this once, Brienne thought, from her own. Brienne knew what she should do, knew what her duty dictated, but it had taken all the strength she had to push Jaime away, to leave him there. Sansa disappeared into her rooms, and Brienne did not follow.